A lot of people believe that function and health is a consequence of age. We know from Blue Zones data that people living in their 80s and 90s can function very well and live full, thriving lives. It's not like we have to slowly decline after the age of 35. So we still can enjoy abundance well into our 90s, I'm sure of it.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So the last time I had the chance to chat with this particular guest, we were on a bus on our way to Banff, because we both sit on a medical advisory committee together. And I hadn't had the chance to spend this much time chatting with Dr. Lee Arsenault before. And the conversation was fascinating. He has the capacity to take any concept of health and dig deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. We went off on tangents. We found ourselves in holes. But the key thing and the cool thing that happened in that conversation and in the conversation that we had in this interview is that we managed to consistently paddle upstream. If you are looking for the answers, the pill that matches the outcome, this is not the interview for you. What we did is we went up the stream and around the corner, my very favorite place to hang out, to really try to understand why disease develops in the first place. We spoke about and got into the functional medicine matrix. We talked epigenetics. We looked at molecular and cellular biology. We talked about the future of medicine as being precision medicine. And we got into looking at some of the predictive biomarkers that we need to understand to in order to predict disease sometimes decades before it comes into play. If performance and health from a preventative standpoint are something that you are interested in, this is the interview for you. Dr. Lee Arsenault, it's such a pleasure to have you on the Entrepology Podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm really excited to chat with you tonight because the last time we had a really good discussion with respect to functional medicine and health, it was on a bus heading out to Banff, and I could have just listened to you chat and ramble and go on to all of these different holes and caveats of health all day long. We're going to talk about a number of things this evening, but maybe what you can do before we get into it is really share with us your story. You're a naturopathic doctor, a functional medicine provider. How did you get to this place in your career and this particular avenue of interest?
Well, I think I had a vision, like most of us. They get into this profession. We have a certain philosophy and vision, and we see it in either a family member's health, or we enjoy the benefits of integrative medicine personally. And there was a real "this makes a lot of sense for me" moment when I got into the field, and then I was exposed to functional medicine, and then I just fell in love with it. It made a lot of sense with the direction that we need to go, how we need to help patients, not only for a health perspective, but maximize performance and maximize function. And there's a lot of potential there. So I really understood its value early on. It made sense to me logically on how we perceive what a healthy person is and what that means for an individual. It's not simply the absence of disease. And so with that being said, I just continue to journey in that direction, and I became completely privileged, humbled, and overwhelmed by the concepts of functional medicine.
And how would you differentiate functional medicine from traditional medicine? And I know a lot of people have been on this podcast have heard this term before, but how would you contextualize it as being a little bit different?
So I think when we're talking about functional medicine approach, so the first thing that we need to recognize is it's a framework, it's a model. It's not about natural's good, drugs are bad, drugs are good, surgery's bad, chiropractic's good or bad. That's not really what it's about. The modality comes after you understand the problem more thoroughly, more completely, and more globally. And I think the framework, the model of functional medicine, also known as systems biology, helps us understand chronic complex health problems to a deeper level and really emphasizes the direction that the research is going towards a mechanistic approach. The way I describe it for my patients is, think of that label that you got, which conventional medicine is saying that's the end of the story. You've got your diagnosis. You've been diagnosed with migraines. And then we apply the appropriate medicine to those migraines. Think of that in functional medicine as the beginning. So that downstream effect is a result of some process. And that process had a beginning. And that process is unique to you. So we take away the idea of just a diagnostic label-based approach to a deeper, more thorough understanding of the uniqueness of that individual and their story. So we know that that process didn't come out of nowhere. That process has a beginning, and there's dysfunctions that occur over time, maladaptations, imbalances, impairments in system and system functioning that eventually lead to that diagnosis. So I would say very clearly that functional medicine is personalized. It focuses on what we call the upstream cause, the entire process and the downstream effect. And it recognizes that the body is composed of complex systems and complex interactions. So some variable, some abnormal interaction or malfunction occurred somewhere that led to that state of health that patient's in on the day that they present to you in a clinic. So we know that the more we understand how those systems became impaired, the more we look at all of the data and all of the research coming out on the what they call the omics revolution and the molecular biology that's telling us how people are getting sick, the more we can understand what's necessary to recover health and help them restore over time.
Well, and it's interesting as you're describing this and this whole system, which, you know, we're both naturopathic doctors, so I feel like this concept is just like roll your eyes obvious to us. But I was drawing, as I tend to do sometimes when I want to know what I'm going to talk about next, and I started drawing these gears, all these gears that interact. And I feel like traditional medicine approaches it as in, you have a problem with a gear, we got to fix that gear, we got to operate on that gear. But as anyone who's ever played with gears that little kids have, you can turn one and eight gears later, they're all turning in unison. And so the problem in one area can lead to what's turning in another area. Anyway, I'm telling you my doodle that's sitting here. But I think sometimes it's nice to have a visual framework for what we're talking about, right? It's really obvious to see how that would all be related in one system.
Yeah, and that's the clear distinction from what they call the silo medicine approach, where everything is looked at in isolation. It's considered mutually exclusive for the next problem. And you and I both see a myriad of patients on a daily basis that come in with 4, 6, 8, 10 different diagnoses. But if you step back and you look at the bird's eye view and the global understanding, the majority of the time, you will, as I will, recognize that there's one or two underlying core imbalances that have not gone addressed. And so what happens is when you deal with that underlying system, then all of a sudden, all these different systems start to function better. And even though they may have eight different diagnoses, they seem to all get better around the same time.
So let's talk about it. What are some of those core underlying imbalances? Because I know a lot of people are sitting there going, well, my thyroid is imbalanced, or I have GERD, or I get migraines. So if we go upstream from that, what are some of those core elements that we need to consider?
So if you look at the functional medicine matrix, we would recognize areas such as defense, immune and inflammatory imbalances, which are a real common undiagnosed problem. We see a myriad of patients with fatigue-like issues related to low-grade latent infections, where the immune system is constantly trying to deal with it, and it's just draining the mitochondria and draining the energy of the individual. So that's one example. Gastrointestinal system, of course. People are like, oh, my B12 is low, and I'm not absorbing B12. Well, no, it's not that simple. You're not just absorbing B12. It's digestion, absorption, assimilation, transport, utilization, metabolism, excretion. Somewhere along that pathway, that cofactor is not adequate for the cellular needs or the molecular biology of the system. And so we have to recognize that it's there's so much complexity, and anywhere along that line, there could be an increase in need, for example. So if you're exposed to a toxin or you're dealing with a low-grade infection, your need for B12 may be higher, and the immune system may be utilizing that B12, and as quickly as you can take it in, it may be depleted. But we often look at a serum B12 level or a serum vitamin D level, not as just, oh, just take B12, just take vitamin D. These are clues to the system and clues to the physiology. So if we look at gastrointestinal health, if we look at absorption assimilation, if we look at liver and detoxification status, if we look at methylation status, HPA axis, stress response, each of these areas, these core physiological systems, are all interacting in one way, shape, or form and driving those areas into imbalance. So it's just a matter of something like a thyroid, for example. Thyroids don't just turn off because they feel like it. Thyroid is actually usually the effect of some other mechanism. And I'll say this, and I'm going to say this quite boldly, and a lot of people are going to have difficulties with this, but I'm going to say this because there's absolutely abundant evidence for what I'm about to say. But normally hormones are an effect, not a primary cause. So hormones are part of a neuroendocrine immune system, and thyroid, progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, DHEA, these hormones are largely an effect of a primary imbalance, either in nutrient imbalances, zinc-copper ratios, oxidative stress, mitochondrial impairment, circadian rhythm. But if you find that problem, you can get the hormones to balance a large majority of the time. Now, sometimes hormone replacement therapy is helpful, but if you can dig deep enough, oftentimes you're able to reduce your dependency on these items.
As you were saying that, I'm sitting here waiting for you to drop this bomb, and you're like, hormones are the downstream effect. And I was like, yeah, of course they are. I'm waiting for your bomb, Lee. But you know, the thing I think that we're not used to doing is ever questioning beyond the diagnosis, right? Mm. And so, you know, you're having symptoms, and forever the solution from your physician is like, we'll just put you on the birth control pill and that'll solve all your problems. And then finally you're like, wait a second, I think there's more to it. And you talk to someone, they're like, oh, you know, your thyroid's probably imbalanced, or you might have a progesterone issue. And you're like, oh, great, hormones are the solution. Now I'm going to go on bioidentical hormones, which is just kind of that next step. But we've never really been trained or given permission to say, why is that? And so if we do that, if we keep asking why, like if we go further and further upstream, we're kind of running out of causes of disease. Like when we go far enough upstream, what are, in your opinion, the primary things that will trigger dysfunction in the body?
Epigenetics.
Right,
so
which is?
The body is a network of networks. And so if you go down and you distill it down further, it starts with what we've been given. So we have a genetic legacy. We have a genetic roadmap. Then we couple that with the next layer, which is a molecular layer. And then we go to the cellular layer. Then we go to the organ layer and the physiological layer. And finally, we end up with either, is the system healthy or is the system diseased or dysfunctioned? So we know now that, and I'm sure anybody who is well-versed in genomics research will tell you, that if you dig deep enough, and functional medicine does it quite eloquently, you will find that the interaction between you and the world, your book of life, and the choices and the exposures that you bring to that genome is going to dictate health or disease. Every exposure, every thought, every food, every environment is a signal. When you touch somebody, when it's a signal, all that information is picked up and transmitted and translated to our book of life, and we respond accordingly. And disease is a result of maladaptation over time. So if you distill it far enough, epigenetics is where we need to begin.
Right. So let's just, I just want to put this in a different, in just different language, and I want you to make sure that I'm on the right path, is that we, everything we do, we're inputting information into our system, and we have a blueprint in our system that is going to interact with that information no matter what. And we give it good information, and it's probably going to flourish, and we give it challenging information, and it's going to have to adapt accordingly.
Absolutely. We're providing the messages. What Dr. Bland would say, messages of bliss or messages of potential threat. And the body has to adapt and adjust accordingly. And if we continue, if we bring in these messages, the body will attempt to adapt. So if you're exposed to a toxin, the body will upregulate or increase its capacity to detoxify that substance. But if the threshold is met, if the capacity is met, then the maladaptive the adaptive process becomes maladaptive or insufficient. And then eventually something's going to change somewhere. And then the symptoms start subtly, right? It's, oh, I don't feel really, really energetic anymore. Or my sex drive isn't what it used to be. I don't sleep as deep anymore. I'm a little bit moodier than I used to be. My focus, concentration, memory, and alertness is not as clear. So all these subtle minor that patients would typically ignore, add an extra coffee for a little bit of extra energy, potentially take something to help them sleep. So if we continue that process of dysfunction over time, you're going to end up with a diagnosis.
How do we stop these things early? So for those people who are like, okay, I'm a little bit tired, I feel like my hormones are a little bit off, I want to understand what these triggers are upstream, or what I'm doing in my daily life that might put me at personal risk. How do we assess that?
So I think, well, first of all, that's something that you have to go through with obviously someone like yourself or myself or other well-versed functional medicine docs. But it would also be like a good idea for people to step back and start to get informed in each of these areas. So I think obviously stress would be, or stressors or stress response would be an area to discuss or review. Pace of life. I find that people are just doing so much in a day that their resources get depleted over time. But you can measure a lot of these things. There are functional predictive biomarkers that can predict autoimmune disease 10 years before it hits. You can predict diabetes several years before they hit. So instead of us waiting to use a blood test as a diagnostic marker, I have this, why don't we start looking upstream and start to look at some of the ways that we can actually assess functionality in the system by using predictive biomarkers, which I'm sure you use in your practice. Mm-hmm. And you couple that information, these real-time biomarkers, with the genetic underpinnings, and you can get a whole lot of information, understand where the system may be weak genetically or in real time, and then start to make corrective changes before you end up with full-blown disease or pathology.
So if I could ask you, I'm actually interested to compare notes. If we were both to pull out our top three lifestyle choices that people are or are not making that most impactfully stress their systems, mm-hmm. What would you say your top three are that you see in your practice? Like, what things people kind of blinders on, or they just kind of push through them?
So lifestyle choices that they make that can be harmful over time?
Yeah, like stuff that they like clearly have blinders on. Like, I'll give you an example in my practice. There is a complete and overwhelming lack of respect for sleep. among my patient population. And occasionally I get caught in that as well. But if we get people, it, like, or lack of movement would be another one that I would say, like, are there things that you're seeing consistently? You're like, these three things, if people would just dial in on them, it would make a huge difference.
So I completely agree. In fact, I just recently went through some of the data on what melatonin and growth hormone do while you're sleeping. And it varies everything from thyroid to estrogen progesterone imbalances to a myriad of cardiovascular changes that will occur when somebody is not sleeping enough. Now, I think the question becomes is how much is enough sleep? And that's, I think, another topic for another day. But the other thing that I would say, and this one I always mention to my patients and they always seem to chuckle. I think one of the most detrimental things that we are doing is not only our pace of life, but multitasking. So
stop,
I say
it.
That and then everybody
Moving
chuckles
on.
Because, yeah, exactly. So if you look at what multitasking does to the brain, very, very, very quickly influences the hippocampus, influences your ability to manufacture serotonin. So most people in our culture, in our society, are not only doing too much in a day, pace of life, but they're multitasking the entire day through. And that's literally draining the resources. So I think multitasking and pace of life would definitely be my top two, I would say. Sleep be another one. The other one that I would say people underestimate is skipping meals. So people are like, oh, I'll just skip a meal and keep going and I'm going to keep working on this project and I'll get to my meal when I get to my meal. But there's a lot of problems associated with skipping meals, especially haphazardly. There's obviously benefits to timed and planned intermittent fasting, but skipping meal is a huge metabolic stress. And I have a few patients that literally we get them to eat more regularly and we turn their thyroid back on. And there are papers that are written that showing that if you're skipping meals on a regular basis, it will have metabolic consequences, which may include low thyroid. So instead of looking for why my thyroid's low, we just go, we take something, the thyroid temporarily feels like it's going a little bit better, and then that habit ends up causing havoc somewhere else.
Yeah, and so maybe take us through this a little bit in terms of how you manage this, because you are a busy individual. You've got three kids, you've got three practices, you're seeing patients all the time, you're coaching hockey. Like, I think there's people listening going, you don't understand how busy my day is. And I am just going to assure them that your day is as busy as theirs.
I think you do.
So how do you avoid, getting caught in these own, these bad habits yourself?
So it takes me back to when I used to lecture on a particular topic. And I remember there was a Time Magazine article, 1930 Time Magazine. And it basically said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that those who do not have time for health now will sooner or later have to find time for illness later. So I choose to make sure that if things are getting out of control or I'm finding a little bit overwhelmed, then I make sacrifices. I make changes. I'm not willing to give up my evenings anymore. I'm not willing to give up my de-stressing time. I'm not willing to give up time with my kids. I just make sure that I'm so healthy or maximally functioning and focused when I am working. I'm more efficient with my time, and therefore I allocate more downtime. What I find a lot of people do is they just keep pushing through and they become so inefficient that what you could do in an hour takes them 4 hours. So I think it all comes down to function, efficiency, and just saying no if you have to. And a lot of people have a hard time doing that, especially in our culture where the corporate squeeze just keeps saying, do more, do more, do more, do more. And I think we have to recognize that more is not always better. And sometimes you can do less, be more efficient, more successful.
Yeah, I have to say that. And I will echo that because I'm really trying hard to be an example in how I live my own life. And I got tired of rushing my kids to school in the morning because I had to be at meetings. And I finally just, I stopped booking anything except for one patient, like one clinic day a week before 9:30 in the morning. And I love taking my kids to school. Like, I love that time of the day. And I think there's not many people who could say they love the time before they get their kids off to school. But it's completely shifted my ability to be productive. It's changed my profile of stress hormones early in the day. Like, and that doesn't have to be the decision that's going to work for everybody. But sometimes you have to make big decisions to have big outcomes.
I totally agree. And we just... we have this idea that we just have to keep taking on more and more and more is better. But it will eventually catch up. But you can be successful. You can work really hard, but just within boundaries. There are countries out there that work almost half the amount of time the average North American works, and their productivity is probably better.
Yeah, I need to move to one of those countries.
Denmark's one of them, apparently.
We'll try it out. Can we? So if we've got all this information, right? We can do all of these things where we can test predictive biomarkers. We can run people's genetics. What does this mean for the future of medicine? I had this thing pop up on my phone the other day. It was a New York Times, news alert that there's just been approval by the FDA for, I think it's a cancer drug that they're trialing where they're going to be able to individualize things even with greater specificity with respect to genetics, like highly individualized cancer treatments based on your genetics more than they're doing now. What does this mean, not from a treatment perspective, but from an upstream perspective in terms of personalized medicine?
So I think it's going to come like a tidal wave, whether we like it or not. I was just presenting to a group of physicians on an article, it's actually an editorial in the Journal of the American Medical Association, published in May of this year, specifically talking about this concept of precision medicine. So they use some pretty fancy words in that article, and one of them that really stuck with me is inexorably, which basically means this is like a train. This is going to happen, whether we like it or not. The future of healthcare is very much personalized and very much unique to the individual. So as we obviously discussed earlier, and that's why there's such a global movement, as you know, towards a model like functional medicine, which really matches with that personalized viewpoint of healthcare and understanding that if we can gain information and gain a detailed understanding of the physiological state of the individual, a lot of the times we can not only manage disease, but we can reverse it. So the Institute for Systems Biology published a paper in August of this year. And basically what they did is just landmark. They took 100 patients. They did their entire human genome. They did their microbiome, they did their metabolome and their proteinome, and they basically input lifestyle coaching, dietary assessments and adjustments, and then they tracked a whole series of biomarkers every 3 months for, I think, a total of 9 months. So they had what this institute calls a dense cloud of data unique to every single patient. So they had thousands and thousands and thousands of biomarkers on all of the changes that are occurring in these individuals. And so here's the perfect opportunity to show where precision or personalized medicine really, really benefits. And what they found is not only did these patients feel better over time, but a lot of them actually reversed their diseases. And what the Institute was able to show is they actually found biomarkers buried in this dense cloud of data that we could predict and more specifically understand certain disease states and help reverse them with these biomarkers. So it's going to step away from the emphasis of diagnostic markers and moving more towards a detailed understanding of these biomarkers way far in ahead before these patients get sick. And so this was a nice example of how we can use all that information to not only reverse disease, but maximize these patients' performance. And these tests can be done, and they're reasonably cost-effective now. It doesn't have to be in the future. This isn't something that we have to wait for. This isn't something that's coming down the pipeline. This is happening right now. And the more people that start using this information, the more cost effective it becomes, and the more the whole paradigm shifts towards this. And doctors are aware of this shift. Patients need to be aware of this shift. This is coming, whether we like it or not.
Well, and let's be clear, from a cost effective perspective, it is way cheaper to prevent a disease from happening than treat the downstream effects.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are a lot of studies that are showing it's 9 times more expensive to treat the disease than to prevent it.
Right. So then the obvious question, which I'm not even sure is a rabbit hole we want to go down, is what could possibly be driving an agenda where we only want to treat the outcome and not the upstream causes of disease? But I don't.
You really want me to answer that?
No. I want everyone to think about that. The other piece is you have a whole group of people. And I'm actually curious how do we implement this across a population? Because ultimately we have this information where we say you are susceptible to this group of diseases, your lifestyle is impacting it. How do we inspire compliance with that information? Because it takes a certain level of commitment for people to actually want to engage in this lifestyle. Everyone who's listening to this are all like, yeah, I'm in. But there's a huge number of people who aren't. And we've got entrepreneurs in this audience. Like, how do we inspire everybody to get on board with this?
And I think the entrepreneurs would be in the class of early takers, I'm sure.
Of course.
But I think people need to start to recognize the value of investing in yourself is better than what we've been commercially told is important to us. We all have to have the best new shoes and we all have to have the newest iPod. But at the end of the day, what I think needs to happen is our value system needs to change. And that usually happens when we start to recognize that this needs to be priority for my family. So I can use myself as an example. So we invest heavily in our, 2-year-old, 4-year-old, and 6-year-old, and in food. We invest heavily with them taking natural products. And so, my grocery bills probably triple the average family, because I recognize if I do it now and I put those, they understand, I'm shaping them. They understand that this is important and this is the way you do things. And so the next generation will be more aware and cognizant of their health. And I think it's slowly, generation by generation, we're moving more towards how can I proactively keep myself healthy, as opposed to beating myself up and then eventually getting a diagnosis. And it's like the old story goes, most of us, and this is another Time quote, most of us spend the first half of our lives accumulating wealth at the expense of their health, and consequently use the second half of their life using that wealth to try and buy back their health.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And ironically, the two things we don't learn about in school, health and finances, are the two things that are just so critical to our effectiveness in the quote unquote adult world. So it's interesting,
right,
you bring up
absolutely.
That quote. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's disappointing that a lot of this seems to be, well, it's almost from the grassroots up, but people generally aren't looking into their health until they have a problem. And it's I think that is slowly changing. I don't know if you would agree with that, but it's going to take the early adopters and it's going to take a lot of information, because right now, I think most of the information that we're getting is there are other areas that are more important and you should be using your resources there. And so unless we start sort of changing our value system, it's going to be difficult. And I think the biggest difficulty we have with changing this health or wellness-based model, or what's called a scientific wellness, I think the problem is we're just waiting too late, and pharmaceutical companies have not been able to provide medication that works more upstream. That's the difficulty with the way a drug works, is that you have to be quite late in the game for them to actually show benefit in randomized trials. So unless we start getting the pharmaceutical companies to start designing different types of drugs, it's going to be difficult, because that's going to be a constant battle, I would say.
Right. And it's not always, it's not always about treatment. It's about, it's not things you take, it's things you do. And I think for this audience, this idea of waiting until you have symptoms, we talk ad nauseum about this concept of the line of fine. And I always use the example that the line of fine is the, it's the job of your primary care provider to get you to the line of fine, meaning they can run blood work, it looks okay, and they can send you out the door because you're quote unquote fine, which is usually not congruent with how you're actually feeling, but that's not necessarily their mandate, right? And so all of the stuff that we're talking about usually happens either upstream of things becoming a problem in the first place, or once we've surpassed that line of fine, now we get to hang out in that place of optimization, and we personalize medicine and precision medicine and all of these great things that we're talking about. If we are hanging out there, if we're talking about performance, do you think everyone needs to be on supplements? Or can we do this with food and lifestyle?
I've had that question many a times. And
me too. I'm just curious.
I'm going to say very positively, you, in this day and age, if we look at the average pace of life, if we look at, you know, the quality of the air, you're breathing the same toxic air I am. If we look at all of the disruptors, I would say, and I've asked patients, I'm like, if you can do it, I'm impressed, because I have not been able to. So, and I would say natural medicine, as the damage and as the pace increases, you have to increase the protective capacity. So it has to balance out, right? So if we're more destructive with our lifestyle, and there's more toxic exposures and changes to our food, et cetera, I don't physically believe you cannot do it without natural medicine. I'm not a proponent of the supplement term, but more just saying, do we need natural medicine? And the answer is yes, especially if you start looking at genomics and maybe you were designed to live in a particular environment in a particular way. And for me, I can use myself as an example. You know, I know that my mom got unwell because of some variations in our genes related to liver function. So if I take this particular natural product for my liver, I feel fantastic. And so I know that either I was designed to live in a cleaner, pure Swiss Alp somewhere, which I would have loved to have been born.
Okay.
But in the environment that I'm in, the environment that my genes are bathed in, I cannot do it without help. I just can't.
And so what types of basic things do you think most people probably need to upregulate in their world? Recognizing that, yes, everyone's different. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So absolutely, foundationally, I would say mitochondrial output for sure. So, and I would also say that I like to go through changes in foundation. So there's 12 basic systems in the body in 12 months of the year. So one of the things that I do personally, and I try and get my patients to do, is I'll do focus on inflammation for a month. Then we'll focus on cognitive function. Then we'll focus on liver. Then we'll focus on hormones. So we'll basically go through those foundational systems and kind of give them a little bit of a reserve top up, if you know what I mean. So, but I would say it would be foundationally important for people to take something for stress response or HPA axis for sure. I would say that people definitely need to take some kind of mitochondrial support, mitochondrial function for sure. Definitely, if patients want to feel well as long as possible, anything, there are a lot of substances for activating or protecting from oxidative stress. That's a healthy aging area as well. So those would kind of be foundational. Liver detoxification, depending on your exposures, very, very important as well. But those would be some of the areas that I would say are primarily important to keep an eye on.
Do you take your patients through detoxes?
Well, we have an environmental medicine consultant, so they generally will touch base with him and seeing what they're being exposed to. And so if we know that all of a sudden they're getting a lot more volatile organic compounds or solvents, then we're going to customize the detoxification toward what their exposures are. It's not uncommon for us to do. I had one patient today that was lead toxic, so we'll do heavy metal treatment. What I typically do is I will do metabolic detoxification programs, but I do a lot of testing on phase one and phase two and making sure that they're in sync. I find a lot of people are imbalanced detoxifiers and they're creating those reactive intermediates. So that would be one area that I would say is very crucial and quite cheap to measure, actually. So that would be something that's helpful. And yes, I will try and do a detoxification spring and fall. And again, doing some personalized work with them, but that's definitely a good idea.
And do you have a few things that you do in your daily life that are independent of supplements that you're like, these are absolute things that I make sure that I include to counteract the pressure of everyday life or environmental exposures? Like, they're just, you don't miss them.
Yeah. So I think one of the key factors that I do is I absolutely making sure that I'm getting downtime, quiet time. That's really, really important for me. So I avoid electronics usually after about 7:30, 8 o'clock. I don't check email at night. I tell people that you're going to have to wait. I'm not on iPads. I'm not watching TV. I find it seems to, with all of the electronic exposure, it seems to affects my quality of sleep, affects my ability to function the next day. So that would be one of the things that just electronic free time, I think, if I summarize that or paraphrase that. And I know that's a difficult one because we seem to think that we won't survive without our phone or email.
Well, we're all very important.
Yes. But the world will keep spinning. You know, the sun will keep providing heat. We all survived without this stuff 15 years ago. So I absolutely consciously turn off my phone. I actually usually dim the lights and I just kind of have a little bit of quiet time. And I find that I spend time with the Bible. So I'll pray a little bit or I'll read a little bit. And it just helps me come down from the stressors of the day. And that on top of outlets. So we can't be perfect all the time. So, you know, once in a while, we just got to go out and, for me, it's a sport. I was just on the hockey ice there with my son. So having those de-stressors to combat the daily stressors, I think is fundamentally important. So adaptogens orally, of course, but at the end of the day, de-stressing in one way, shape, or form, whether it's through a faith or through time with family or quiet time, nature walks. There's lots of studies showing that nature walks change the physiology a lot different than walks through the city. That's a big one that I talk to patients about. So it seems that there's a difference in how the body processes information through a forest than it does through a city.
So true. What an incredible breadth of topics we've discussed. I love talking about health with you because we go so deep and all over the place. Lee, what do you want your legacy to be?
I would like to make an impact on humanity. I believe God has given all of us gifts, and those gifts are designed to be used to serve others. And it's when we start to use those gifts for our own benefit, I think that we lose track of our compass and the direction that we should be heading. So I'd like to, like you, Megan, I think we'd like to have a positive impact on patients' health, but also be a part of this global change through research, through patient health, through these education sessions, through informing and educating other doctors, through publications and lectures. So I would like to be the one that was able to keep the balance so that I don't miss a one kick with the children where they recognize that their father's always there, yet I'm still able to, provide my passion to the world and make a positive impact on other people, whether it's through their health or through a smile as I open the door or otherwise. But I think the more we can generate those messages of bliss for others, the more we can serve others, the better this place is going to be. So I think that's what I would like my legacy to be, and someone who is able to, you know, be part of this change and also keep that healthy balance.
And what a perfect segue to this question. How would you define health? In 100 words or less.
I would say health is a state of mind. Health is a choice. Health is obviously not merely the absence of disease, but the ability to adapt, thrive, enjoy. I think that if you're able to go out and do what you do and do it well and feel well while you're doing it, I think that's a big aspect of this whole idea behind vitality and function. And I think that being said, I think a lot of people believe that function and health is a consequence of age. We know from Blue Zones data that people living in their 80s and 90s can function very well and live full thriving lives. It's not like we have to slowly decline after the age of 35. So we still can enjoy abundance well into our 90s, I'm sure of it.
I'm so glad to hear that life does not decline after the age of 35. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. What a great way to segue to the last few questions in the interview. And so I call these KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we would have these in our businesses or ventures, I think we have them in our health. So these are just five quick rapid fire questions for you, for us to get a sense of how you're living your authentic life every day. First question, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes, I do have a consistent morning routine. I get up. Well, would you like to hear my morning routine?
Yeah, I said, if so, you can share. You go for it.
Absolutely. So we definitely get up. I try and go to bed early, so I try and get up early. First thing I do is I actually go outside and get a little bit of sunshine for literally, you know, 1 minute, 2 minutes. So I go outside, I get sun. And there's lots of studies on the benefit of early morning sunshine as it affects your circadian rhythm and your sleep-wake cycle. So then I get up, I try and have a little bit of quiet prayer time before the kids get up. Then we get all three boys, get them up, get them out, on our way to the clinic. And that's, we generally have a smoothie first thing in the morning, but that's our basic routine. So a little bit of sunshine, a little bit of stretching, a small little workout that I do. Then we get the kids up, have a really high quality breakfast. I generally get them out to the bus and spend a few minutes with them before they go on their day. And then I go on with my day.
Brilliant. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
I don't think I've ever read a nonfiction book in my entire life. I mean, a fictional book in my entire life.
It's like the most common answer. What are you reading right now?
Really?
Yeah. Like I have had one person who reads fiction. Yeah.
Really?
So
what kind of people are you interviewing? Are we all crazy?
I know. I self-select. Yes. Crazy people. Didn't you get that memo?
I like astronomy.
Cool. Okay. So what are you reading at the moment?
To be honest with you, I'm not reading astronomy right now, but it's definitely on my to-do list. I want to read more Stephen Hawking's work, actually.
His PhD thesis just got released today, so you're in luck. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I think the downtime is very, very important for me. So I am very consistent with downtime. And if I miss it, I make sure I make up for it. So I clearly demarcate those boundaries.
It's great. I need to hear this. What do you do for fun or play?
So I coach soccer in the summer and I coach hockey in the winter. I play sports. I enjoy golf, although with the kids being a little young, not as much golf, but definitely soccer, hockey, and time with close friends.
And last question for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Well, I've recognized the genetic pattern in entrepreneurs that I've seen. So if you look at their genetics, they're actually very rich in dopamine. Nature, nurture, I think there's a genetic underpinning. And then I think the right environment really helps an entrepreneur to thrive. You know, the right family dynamic and a lot of supportive structures and a lot of, you know, people aiding and assisting along the way. So I think what drives entrepreneurial, successful entrepreneurs is likely there is a genetic underpinning. You match those genes with the right environment and the right structure, and you end up with success.
What a great answer. I love that you pulled the genetics in there. Dirk Denarsno, you are up to some really cool stuff. Where can people learn more about what you're doing?
So they can go to our website, advancedmedicine.ca. That'll give a breakdown of some of the things that we're doing, lectures coming up, publications that we're getting out there, and just, you know, working with a pretty amazing team. I'm really blessed to be able to work with people like Dr. Mansoor and a whole group of integrative MDs. And so I like to pick their brains. So we have a pretty robust team amongst the three clinics, and we like to solve really complex health problems. So advancedmedicine.ca would be the place to go.
Perfect. And we will have all of that in our show notes. It's been such a pleasure having this conversation with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Megan. It was a pleasure. I'd love to do it again in the future, and love to connect with you and see how you're doing in your busy life.
Absolutely. Well, you'll have to get past my downtime and then maybe we can connect.
Sounds good.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.